Nothing to talk about today on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. I have no idea what possibly could serve as topics on today's version of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson, which, by the way, you can hear every Wednesday through Friday from 2 to 3 p.m. here on AM 950. It is Brett Johnson joined alongside by Patrick Lilia, who is sitting on the other side of the production glass as we are both properly social distanced as we are every day. Patrick, man, I was really struggling today to figure out what the heck to talk about with political news. There's just nothing to talk about. There's no news whatsoever, is there?
Nope. Oh, wait, you're looking at Monday's notes.
Oh, yes. Good point. Good point. Yes. It is Wednesday, the day after the primary, and man, in all honesty, we have a lot to talk about as we are going to be going through primary results from yesterday at both the congressional and the state level, since we are having quite a shakeup with the DFL in the state legislature as four longtime incumbents were defeated yesterday by more progressive challengers. We'll talk about the congressional level, where Ilhan Omar successfully was able to fend off her challenge from Antone Melton Mukes by a fairly healthy margin. We'll talk about what happened in CD7 and even some national races as well. And then second half of the show, we'll talk about what's happening with the Veep Stakes now that Kamala Harris is officially the vice presidential nominee for Joe Biden. We're going to talk about what that means, the strategy as to why Biden picked Harris, and what that could mean for the future of the Democratic Party and politics in general. I think it makes 2024 shape up to look a lot like 2016, and I'll talk about why coming up in the second half. Let's start off with primary results from yesterday, and we're going to get things going with the big race that people were following, and that is the 5th Congressional District, which of course includes Minneapolis and some of the surrounding suburbs, where Ilhan Omar was able to defeat Antone Melton Mukes, her well-funded challenger. They're still counting votes, but basically, even if we were to bring in some late mail-in votes, it would be impossible for Melton Mukes to close that gap, even if every single vote were to go his way. It's going to turn out where Omar will probably end up winning with about 60%, while Melton Mukes will end up with somewhere between about 35 and 40 points, which means Omar will win relatively comfortable. In fact, that was kind of my thought. I was almost calling that Omar would win by about a 60-40 margin over Melton Mukes. But let's take a closer look at how this race broke down. First, turnout was absolutely incredible in the 5th Congressional District. Politico actually broke this down. So, as of yesterday, Melton Mukes had gotten 59,451 votes. What does that mean? Well, it's nearly as high as the total turnout in Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's primary. So, if you remember back when AOC was primaried by another well-funded challenger, the combined votes that both AOC and her primary challenger got was less than the number of votes Antone Melton Mukes got, who lost his race to Ilhan Omar. In Rashida Tlaib's race, that would be Michigan's 13th Congressional District, Melton Mukes, with a total of 59,000 votes, yeah, he would have won in that district. That just shows how strong turnout was in CD5, as people were really fired up about this race. Now, where was that turnout? Primarily in the city of Minneapolis, which bode well for Ilhan Omar. In fact, we even have precinct results, the 13 precincts in Minneapolis and the surrounding suburbs. So, if you remember my conversation with Professor David Schultz last week, we were talking about what a path to victory for Ilhan Omar would look like versus what a path to victory for Antone Melton Mukes would look like. And for Omar, what she really needed to do was have a big turnout in Minneapolis, especially in North Minneapolis and the southeastern parts of the city. And well, that's exactly what she got. If we break down every single precinct, there's 13 of them in Minneapolis. Omar won 12. Yeah, she won 12 of those 13 precincts. The only precinct Antone Melton Mukes won was Ward 13, which represents the chain of lakes in southwest Minneapolis. So, yeah, the area that is the wealthier portion of Minneapolis. That was the only precinct that Melton Mukes won. So Omar essentially did what she had to do in the city of Minneapolis, where she not only won 12 of those 13 precincts, but she also had massive turnout numbers in those 12 precincts in Minneapolis. In fact, if we compare that turnout to what we saw in the surrounding suburbs, in several of these precincts, they had a higher turnout than an entire suburban city. For instance, in 12 of the precincts, they had a higher turnout than what Golden Valley had, or than what Richfield had, or Fridley, or Columbia Heights, which bode really well for Ilhan Omar, since she needed to do well in most of Minneapolis. Now, for Melton Mukes, his path to victory largely meant racking up big totals in the suburbs and then doing well in South Minneapolis and Southwest Minneapolis. And unfortunately for him, if you're a fan of Melton Mukes, that just didn't happen for him. As I pointed out, there were several Minneapolis precincts that had higher turnouts than individual suburban cities, which is pretty shocking when you think about that. Each Minneapolis precinct has approximately 20,000 to 30,000 residents, and several of these surrounding suburbs have higher populations than that. But if we look at the results from the suburbs, most of them were actually pretty even between Ilhan Omar and Antone Melton Mukes. In fact, Melton Mukes only won a couple of suburbs, St. Louis Park, Golden Valley, and a small portion of Edina. I say a small portion of Edina because it's kind of weird down there where part of Edina is in the 3rd and then the other part of Edina is in the 5th congressional district, so it's more kind of split in half. But Melton Mukes needed to rack up big totals in the suburbs, and it just didn't happen for him. Not only was turnout down in those surrounding suburbs, but in the suburbs he did win, he was only winning St. Louis Park and Golden Valley and Edina and Fridley and others by very, very small margins. They were close to being 50-50. Where if you look at Minneapolis and the individual precincts, Omar was just racking up massive margins over Melton Mukes. So, yeah, essentially Omar did exactly what she needed to do while Melton Mukes had lots and lots of trouble in the suburbs trying to get turnout and then trying to, well, rack up big margins in those areas. Another key kind of swing part of Minneapolis we were looking at, going back to my conversation with David last week, we were kind of thinking like the Lake Nokomis, South Minneapolis area could be the swing area of the 5th District that would give us an indication as to how they would end up voting, and that largely ended up being the case. That would be Ward 11, which includes Lake Nokomis and some other areas, and guess what? Ilhan Omar won that precinct by about a 60 to 40 margin, which is pretty much what the entire district ended up voting as. So, yeah, for the most part, Omar exactly did what she needed to do, while Melton Mukes just wasn't able to quite turn out the number of voters that he needed in order to knock off Omar in that primary. So overall, what can we learn from this race? Well, incumbents are very, very difficult to primary. In fact, it's very, very rare to even have incumbents lose primary races. The only times we've really even seen incumbents lose primary races are when the challengers are from the progressive side of the aisle and the incumbents are from the moderate. And in CD5, we had the exact opposite scenario, where we had the incumbent Omar being the more progressive candidate and the challenger, or the insurgent candidate, Melton Mukes, being the more moderate. So yeah, incumbents, very difficult to beat, so Melton Mukes had that working against him and Omar working to her advantage. But what's even better news if you're an Ilhan Omar supporter is that likely this is probably the last significant challenge she's going to face in a DFL primary, because first-term representatives are usually their most vulnerable when they're facing their first re-election. Generally, after you're re-elected once, it's more and more difficult to try to defeat you. So I would be very surprised if we saw another well-funded challenger go against Omar in a future year, simply because prognosticators and people who finance campaigns are probably going to look at things and say, well, look at 2020. We raised, what, over $4 million for a challenge to Ilhan Omar in her first re-election campaign, where in theory she should be at her most vulnerable, and she still ended up winning by roughly 20 percentage points. So, in other words, this is likely going to be Omar's congressional seat for as long as she wants it. Yeah, very, very unlikely that she'll face the type of primary challenge that she did here in 2020 in a future year. By the way, feel free to call in and tell us how you voted and why you voted for whichever candidate you went for yesterday. We're at 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. That can be if you voted in the primary in the 5th District or really any area of Minnesota. I know we have lots of listeners that live in the suburbs that may have voted in the 3rd or the 6th Districts or the 2nd. There were some other primaries, so feel free to call in with your experience. We will have open phone lines for the entire hour. But that's the story of what happened in CD5. Ilhan Omar able to rack up big margins in Minneapolis. And for the future, she's probably got that seat locked down for as long as she wants. Let's head to the phone lines and talk to Gary in Minneapolis. Hey there, Gary. Did you end up voting
in
yesterday's?
Hi, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, great here. How about you?
Good, good. I got some information. These ain't false facts like you see on Murdoch's Trump TV. They got their own little world of facts, false facts or fake facts. And so, anyways, I used to have cable years ago, quite a few years, and I watched the science channels. This was on one of the science channels. And today there are still about 6 supervolcanoes. They're much massive, more than a regular volcano. And Yellowstone's one of them. There's one over in Italy, another one by Vesuvius. And then there's one in New Zealand. There's more in Indonesia. Anyways, it takes a while to say this, but about 94,000 years ago, or 74,000 years ago, one of these supervolcanoes went off, and it puts sulfur dioxide spreads over the air. And so over the world, most of the plant life died, including most of the species. And there were about 2,000 to 10,000 humans that survived. And they were in Tanzania. And eventually they spread all over the planet. And the people did. And there's so what I'm saying is we all descended from dark-skinned people. And as the people went north into Germany and Scandinavia and that, they needed more sunlight because there's less sunlight there, so their skin lightened. And then diet, I was told, also affects your skin color. So what I'm saying is we're all the same race, the human race, and maybe I thought maybe these white supremacists in particular would be interested in this if they're listening.
I'm guessing they won't be interested in that, but appreciate the phone call, Gary. Hey, by the way, before we let you go, did you end up voting yesterday, or were you someone who voted ahead of time?
Yeah, I voted ahead of time early voting, and of course, I was worried about my congresswoman.
Yeah, you're Ilhan Omar,
and it came out a lot better than I thought. There was tons of, I believe that was conservative money, a lot of it, and most of it.
Oh, no doubt.
Anyways, she did good. I still got her.
All right, appreciate the phone call, Gary. Only on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson can we go from talking about politics to supervolcanoes. Always appreciate Gary. Hey, speaking of supervolcanoes, now that Gary brought that up, when I was producing for Matt a couple of weeks ago, somehow we got to actually talking about supervolcanoes. I think Matt was looking at, there was like some sort of conspiracy theory he saw where apparently the Russians were trying to trigger the supervolcano at Yellowstone Park, and somehow that was part of those seeds that were being mailed to people to grow plants all over. Are you familiar with that, where people were being mailed seeds all over Minnesota and the country, Patrick?
Yeah, I thought that was, but I didn't know that. This extended.
We were joking about that on one of the shows, how apparently someone was putting it out there that these seeds were like a conspiracy theory where if we all planted those, they would somehow trigger the supervolcano at Yellowstone National Park. So appreciate the phone call as always, Gary, and taking us in some interesting directions, to say the least. But by the way, though, talking about what he mentioned with receiving lots of mail, I don't live in CD5. I live close to being there, but I'm not quite in CD5, so I didn't see all of those mailers. But I sympathize with folks who were getting just stacks of mail in their boxes, either in favor of Omar or against her, or supporting Melton Mewkes or being against him. Nonetheless, as Gary accurately brought up, there was lots of money spent in that race and a lot of Republican money being spent in CD5 that was trying to knock off Ilhan Omar. And as I mentioned, this was probably their one chance to knock her off. I don't imagine in a future election cycle we're going to see anywhere near the amount of money that was spent this year in CD5, simply because, well, this is their one chance to knock her off, and, well, for the most part, they came nowhere near to defeating Omar in this primary election, which is interesting because of all of the squad members, all four of them, three of them won their primaries very comfortably, and one of them, I can't remember which one, ended up not even facing a primary challenger. So, yeah, whether you love them or hate them, those members of the squad, they're going to be there for a long, long time in Congress. Hey, let's get one more phone call before we head to break. We got Julie in Minneapolis. Hey there, Julie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. See, I just want to remind people of the number for Congress. Call about the post office being kneecapped and to pass COVID. The number for Congress is 202-224. 3121. You know, even though I'm not in their district, I asked to be switched to some of the Republicans that are on the oversight committee for the post office, and you get a voicemail. But if you ask to be switched to their district office, you get a human being, and that's what we need to do. We need to make people who are working at home for these Republican Congress people to take up some of their time and feel the heat. I'm also, as a senior, I'm very concerned about Donald Trump coming out on the radio and actually saying he wanted to permanently, basically defund Social Security, which helps people who are on disability, children whose parents have died, etc. So anyway, I just want to let people know about that phone number to Congress. Get on the phone, put the heat on the Republicans, and let's see what we can accomplish. Thank you.
All right. Good advice there, Julie. And in addition to making those phone calls to Congress, I heard one of the most effective ways to actually get their attention is sending an old school postcard to them. Because if you actually send a postcard, I think they're like guaranteed to read it, or someone on their staff is guaranteed to read it. There was some sort of like procedure that they have to take if you work in a congressional office, where basically if you send in a postcard, it's much more likely to be heard or at least read by someone in that office, if not the representative or the senator themselves. So as Julie brought up, make those phone calls. But if you're up for doing the old school style, go with the snail mail and send in one of those postcards. Oh, yeah, that's why I was thinking you send in the postcards, now that I'm remembering it. Yeah, the reason you do postcards is that apparently if you send it like in an envelope, like a traditional piece of mail in an envelope, it's less likely to be read just because of the security concerns, where if you send it on a postcard, it's much easier to get through since there's less security to that would potentially hamper that, being that you can see what's on a postcard rather than in an envelope where you have to open it. There's a lot more security that goes into that, simply because, well, that's the function of Congress, and they're always scared of getting like anthrax in the mail or whatever else. Yeah, remember when anthrax was the big scare like in 2001? So yeah, now that jogs my memory, that's why you're supposed to send in a postcard instead of an envelope if you're going to be mailing something to your representative or your senator. Hey, Mike and Steve, hang on the phone lines. We'll get to your phone calls in just a couple of minutes, but we got to take a break here on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. We'll continue going through primary results, then we'll talk about what happened with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris being picked as the vice presidential nominee and more. That's all on the way here on AM 950.
Let Next Chapter Booksellers help you catch up on your summertime reading. Their expert staff can help make book recommendations no matter what your taste. Plus, Next Chapter Booksellers also sells a wide variety of puzzles and games. They have free home delivery within St. Paul for orders over $50, and free mail shipments within the U.S. for orders over $50. Open daily by phone from 10 to 3. Call 651-225-8989 or visit nextchapterbooksellers.com.
This is Gregory Rich from Habitation Furnishing and Design and Drink in the Style. You may not realize it, but a trained, skilled interior designer cannot just beautify your space, they can functionify it as well. I don't know if that's a word, but it is a thing. So why not check out habitationdesign.com and see if it looks like we're right for you. If it does, give us a call and let's schedule an appointment, in person or virtually, to make your home exceptional. Habitationdesign.com.
And the glow from that fire can truly light the world.
And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your internet marketing can do for you, but what you can do for your marketing.
Hi, this is Chad Hobart with Social Media MN. Coronavirus has challenged every small business owner. What you can do for your internet marketing today will likely determine how your business pivots and recalibrates to find and retain new customers online. Social Media MN offers uncomplicated, results-driven, and affordable internet marketing solutions. Call us today for a hassle-free consultation at 763-244-4058. That's 763-244-4058. Or visit us online at socialmediamn.com. That's socialmediamn.com.
Hi, this is Laura. Listen to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m. or anytime via podcast. Our individual health is connected, connected to the health of each other, and connected to the health of the earth. We know the problems with the dominant food system, climate change, deadening soils, nitrates in the water, factory farming, injustice, concentration of wealth. How do we both as individuals and as a community step up and support a living food system which honors the earth? Tune to Food Freedom Radio every Saturday at 8 a.m. and remember to support your independent farmers.
Hi, everyone. Matt McNeil here. I want to thank everyone from the bottom of my heart who's become a member of AM 950 over the last few weeks. You can become a member by simply heading over to am950radio.com and donating. The membership response has been so great, we're planning on launching some brand new members-only content, like a monthly Tom Hartman interview and weekly updates with new content. Head over to am950radio.com and declare, yes, I want to support AM 950. For everyone who is a member, thank you so very much for your support, and thanks for listening to the progressive voice of Minnesota, AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. By the way, speaking of that bonus content that you can find on the member page of AM 950, last week I posted my interview with Santita Jackson, who was hosting our new morning show every weekday from 6 until 8 a.m. Go through and listen to that if you are a member, as you get a little more background about what Santita is all about. She talks about some of her early childhood experiences with politics and having, well, a very famous father in being the Reverend Jesse Jackson. So go ahead and you can find that at am950radio.com on the member content page. We'll continue with our primary results. We got to talk about four longtime DFLers who were toppled in legislative primaries yesterday. We'll also talk about some Republican results. But first, let's go to the phone lines. We got Mike in North Minneapolis. Hey there, Mike.
Hi, how you doing? I just wanted everybody to be of good cheer that, you know, with this monkey business of the dark money coming from out of town, that's usually right-wing groups that, you know, don't want to be identified. And they did pump a lot of money into Mr. Mueck's campaign. But the good news is that Ilhan beat him so badly that there's a certain Republican in town by the name of Lacey Johnson who is going to be Ilhan's opponent coming up in the November election. And he is going to find out the hard way that now there will be no more of that money for him to use in this November, because those donors will look at it and say, no, she's too strong. We're not going to waste our money in this race. We're going to pull it out and target it for other areas. So that's a very good thing, a good result as of what happened yesterday.
All right, Mike, appreciate the phone call. Yeah, on that Republican side, it was Lacey Johnson who is going to be the GOP nominee I'm sure Matt next hour is going to be devastated. Danielle Stella only got 15% of the vote in that Republican primary. So
you and I thought this exact same thing at the exact same time.
Yeah, you were going to bring that up too. Yeah, he won pretty overwhelmingly. I want to say he got like 70 or 80% of the vote. I think there were like 4 or 5 Republicans who were vying for that nomination. But Mike's other point about the money spigot drying up for Lacey Johnson probably will for the most part, but I still think he is going to get a fair amount of money just because people that especially don't live in Minnesota are going to see, oh, look, that's the opponent of Ilhan Omar. I'll send him a check for $100 or $200. In fact, I think it was like Washington Post or Politico that wrote an article about this a couple of months ago, how they reached out to some of these people from out of state, just random ordinary people, not wealthy folks, who were donating to Republican campaigns in safe Democratic districts. And once whatever media outlet this was contacted these people and said, you do know you're donating to a district that is very, very safe Democratic, they were kind of regretting making that donation. Didn't stop them nonetheless, simply because, well, you see, oh, look, there's an opponent to Ilhan Omar. I'm going to donate to her campaign. So Lacey Johnson, the Republican nominee, yeah, he probably won't be getting quite as many donations as he had been before the primary, but yeah, there's still going to be a few suckers who are going to give him some money. Let's go to Steve in Minneapolis. Hey there, Steve.
Hi. Yeah, I'm so glad I finally get to talk about this, because I'm a precinct chair in District 62. So, Mukes started showing up at our meetings last winter. And the guy's impeccable resume, perfect family, perfect everything. I just wanted to ask him, who sent you? But obviously I couldn't do that. But I'm certainly happy with the results.
All right. Appreciate the phone call there, Steve. Yeah, if people who are opposed to Omar were going to try to set up a viable candidate against her, no knock against Melton Mukes, but I think Steve accurately pointed out he was a relatively unknown figure prior to last winter when he announced his run in CD5. You would think if there was a bigger groundswell in opposition to Omar, they might have picked someone with a little better name recognition in Minneapolis. All right, let's take a break, and we're going to come on back and talk about what happened in the state legislature, as we have a number of longtime DFLers who have been defeated. Yeah, we're going to be getting some new blood in the DFL party at the state legislature. We'll talk about that and go through what happened with the Republicans last night, too. So stay with us here on AM 950.
If you have a painting project, you should consider hiring Nick Slavic Painting and Restoration Company. We've been awarded nationally for craftsmanship, are highly professional, responsive, and fairly priced. If you feel overwhelmed by starting a painting project, we make it easy from start to finish. We move furniture, vacuum, sweep, dust, and put your home back the way we found it. There is a difference. Our professionalism sets us apart. Visit NICKSLAVIK.com. That's NickSlavic.com to learn more.
Cafe Latte combines a cafe dining experience with gourmet quality food. And right now, Cafe Latte has reopened to indoor dining at 50% capacity. So come check out their pizza and wine bar, or get a treat from the bakery made fresh daily. Plus, you can still do online ordering and takeout, along with gift cards. Just go to CafeLatte.com and choose from their ever-changing selection of award-winning salads, sandwiches, and soups. Cafe Latte is located off Victoria and Grand and online at CafeLatte.com.
The Electric Fetus is now open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 to 6. There are limits to the number of people allowed in the store and masks are required. Web and phone orders are available for curbside pickup, but the Electric Fetus is currently only buying used vinyl and DVDs by appointment only at this time. Visit electricfetus.com for the latest info and to shop for music, gift department merchandise, and gift cards. 2000 4th Avenue South, Minneapolis, and electricfetus.com.
Would you let animals pick your insurance? Do you really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates? Or how about a celebrity quarterback or fake university saving you money? There's a lot of marketing stunts when it comes to insurance, but what you really need is someone looking out for you. Call Array Insurance, and they will work hard to find you the best insurance coverage and rates. So avoid gimmicks and call Cheryl at Array, 763-504-8255. 3067 or arrayinsurance.com. Array Insurance, working hard for you.
The Minnesota Army National Guard salutes the high school graduating class of 2020. We recognize all of your hard work and the resilience you've demonstrated during this historic time for our country. Those are the traits of a great citizen soldier. You can continue to stand out and be a leader in your community as a soldier in the Minnesota Army National Guard. Learn more about the benefits of part-time service in the Army National Guard at NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard, aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around, check us out online, and when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Brett Johnson. Look for mostly cloudy skies today with a high near 82. Tonight, cloudy with a low around 68. Thursday, slight chance for rain with a high near 84. And Friday, partly sunny with a high around 84.
Estate planning doesn't just create a plan for what happens after you die. It helps your loved ones care for you in the event of an accident or as you age. Get started today with Schroman Law in St. Paul. Call 651-571-2515 or visit schromanlaw.com. That's S-C-H-R-O-M-E-N-Law.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Wednesday edition of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. So today we're mostly going to be focusing on what happened in Democratic primaries, but do want to spend a couple of moments talking about the Republicans. They did have some significant primaries last night. We'll go to CD7, which is Western Minnesota, where the current sitting representative is everyone's favorite Democrat, Colin Peterson. Republicans were trying to figure out who is going to be the person that will challenge Colin Peterson this fall. The contest was between Michelle Fischbach, who is a former state senator and lieutenant governor. The other guy was David Hughes, who was the Republican nominee back in 2016 and 2018. And in both of those races, he came pretty close to winning. But yesterday it was Fischbach prevailing over Hughes by a pretty healthy margin, 59% to 22%. And Fischbach is going to pose, a very significant challenge to Colin Peterson, being that she has a very high profile, being the former lieutenant governor of the state. She has lots of money that she has raised thus far. And, yeah, there's a very good chance she could knock off Colin Peterson. In fact, Cook Political Report, which handicaps lots of the congressional races, lists this as one of the few races around the country that Republicans might be able to flip a Democratic seat. Most of the seats right now that are toss-ups are likely to go from Republican to Democrat, but this is one of the few that could go from Democrat to Republican. So Fischbach will be the nominee. And what I find interesting is that even if she were to knock off Colin Peterson and go to Congress, it could set up a Republican civil war in Minnesota. Here's why. So, of course, after 2020, the census is going to be taken, and we are going to go through redistricting. And that's going to be significant in Minnesota due to the fact that we are likely to lose a congressional seat. The reason being is that Minnesota is growing slower than other states around the country. So even though Minnesota is gaining population every year, we're just not growing quite as quickly as other states. So that's the reason why we're probably going to lose a congressional seat. And CD7, of course, is a very rural area, and CD7 has been losing population. So I would imagine when they redistrict, even if Michelle Fischbach were to win, part of her district is probably going to get merged into CD6 or to CD8, which could set up an interesting civil war with either Pete Stauber or Tom Emmer. I don't think Pete Stauber or Tom Emmer are exactly keen to be stepping down from Congress anytime soon. So, yeah, even if we have a Representative Fischbach who goes to Congress, there's a good chance that after redistricting, she could end up being in the same congressional district as Emmer or as Pete Stauber. So, yeah, that could definitely set up a potential Republican civil war here in Minnesota. By the way, for Colin Peterson, if he ends up winning and going on to hold his seat for two more years, I'm guessing he's probably going to retire after this year simply because, as I said, his district probably won't exist anymore. And if it were to get merged into CD6 or CD8, he would have even less of a chance of winning. So that's what happened over there in CD7. Taking a look at what happened in the legislature with the Republicans, no incumbents were defeated last night, but a couple I do want to highlight. Paul Gazelka did face a primary challenge in his district, but he ended up winning comfortably 84-16, despite the fact that Gazelka's opponent had raised a pretty significant amount of money and was trying to, get this, paint Gazelka as being too moderate and too friendly with the Walz administration. Gives you a good indication of where the Republican Party in Minnesota is at. Another notable legislative primary for the Republicans was in Carver County. This would be the district where Scott Jensen is retiring. It was a race between Julia Coleman, who is the daughter of Norm Coleman, facing off against the mayor of Victoria, Tom Funk. Coleman ended up winning that race pretty comfortably, so she will move on for the Republicans in Scott Jensen's old seat. Then one thing I do want to bring up nationally for the Republicans, this has nothing to do with Minnesota, but still want to mention this. Marjorie Taylor Greene in Georgia won a Republican primary. Now, I bring that up because Marjorie Taylor Greene is potentially going to be the first QAnon supporter to be elected to Congress. She was able to survive her Republican primary, despite the fact that the establishment part of the Republican Party was pouring in a ton of money to try to get her opponent to win. Did not end up happening, so Marjorie Taylor Greene will be going to Congress, despite the fact that she is a QAnon supporter and has made many racist statements in the past. She's been disowned by many members of the Republican Party, but once she gets to Congress, it'll be interesting to see if they continue to disown her. My guess would be probably not. They're probably still going to give her all the committee assignments she wants. So they're talking a tough game against her now, but once she ends up going to Congress, I'm guessing that tune will likely change because guess what? That will be another R in the column for them. Let's talk to Kathleen in Minneapolis, who wants to go back and talk about CD5 with Antone Melton Mukes and Ilhan Omar. Hi there, Kathleen.
Hello. I just wanted to bring up, because no one else has brought this up, but when I started getting all that literature from Americans for Tomorrow's Future, a redundant name if there ever was one,
yeah.
I called the library, since I'm not online, and asked who Americans for Tomorrow's Future are. And it's a pro-Israel political action committee. And I'm sure that Melton Mukes also got money from American Israel Public Affairs Committee, which
yeah,
is an
APAC,
Israeli
right.
lobbyist group. But, and I don't know whether the hedge fund or equity group are people who are Zionists. But the thing is that not every Jewish person in this country, let alone in this area, is pro-Israel simply because of the way they're treating Palestinians and the land theft of Palestinian land. But nobody has brought that up, and I just want to bring it up because I do not like the United States policy on supporting the Israeli government, no matter what it does, because it's terrorizing and it's murdering Palestinians. So I just want people to know that Melton Mukes was part of that. And believe me, I did not like, they were trashing Ilhan Omar, and I detested that. So anyway, I just wanted to bring that up. Thank you.
All right, thanks for the phone call, Kathleen. And you were hinting at something that several members of the Democratic Party who have been critical of Israel have tried to point out, that just because you're critical of the Israeli government does not mean you're critical of the Israeli people. That's an important distinction that they often try to make, and I think that's kind of what Kathleen was talking about, where, yeah, just because you don't support the government of Israel does not mean you hate the Israeli people. That's an important distinction, and glad Kathleen was able to call in and bring that up. All right, let's talk about what happened in the DFL primaries last night in the state legislature, because we had a number of longtime representatives and senators who were defeated by more progressive challengers. In Senate District 62, which is part of South Minneapolis, including the area where George Floyd was murdered, It was represented by State Senator Jeff Hayden, who was one of only two black members of the state Senate. He was defeated by his primary challenger, the DFL-endorsed activist Omar Fattah. Fattah looks like he'll end up winning that race by a roughly 55-44 margin, although there are still going to be some votes coming in. But most people are saying that even if those mail-in votes do come in late, there still wouldn't be enough to close that margin. So Fattah will very likely be the DFL nominee this fall, and being that this is a safe Democratic district, Omar Fattah will probably be the next senator, knocking off Jeff Hayden, who had represented that district for a long time. He'll also be the only Somali-American and the first Democratic socialist to serve in the state Senate. Omar Fattah does classify himself as being a Democratic socialist. Another Minneapolis DFL stalwart who was knocked off was four-term State Representative Raymond Dean, as he was trailing his challenger, that would be activist and attorney Esther Egbaji. This was a close race, 47-42, but Egbaji is very likely to win. She is the daughter of Nigerian immigrants and says progress on social and racial justice issues have been too slow in the state legislature, and she vows to break the systemic barriers of race, gender, and class. In northern Minnesota, we had a bit of an upset as Attorney Jen McEwen was able to topple longtime State Senator Eric Simonson. This is a district that represents Duluth and some of the surrounding cities, and McEwen won this by a very, very wide margin. She got 74% of the vote. The big issue up there that was really contentious was, as you can probably guess, being Duluth, the environment, where activists were accusing Simonson of being too friendly with some of the pipelines and PolyMet and others up there. So McEwen will have a much tougher line on, or a much tougher stance, I should say, on several of these mining companies and other people who are in favor of mining and drilling up in that area. What's significant, though, is that Simonson did get the endorsement of Governor Tim Walz, but still ended up losing by a wide, wide margin. Now, Patrick, you used to live up in the Duluth area, so you're kind of familiar with the politics up there. It is a real balancing act that DFLers have to kind of make when they're up there in northern Minnesota between having those union interests versus having the mining interests, even though I don't think those need to be mutually exclusive. But it's a balancing act that DFLers have had to toe for a while. And in this case, in this primary, Democrats ended up siding with the person who is more friendly towards environmental causes.
Absolutely. In the last several years, in the Duluth area and up the shore as well, in places like Grand Marais, there's kind of become a reckoning that they're realizing that with the way their economy has turned, they need to preserve the environment maybe a lot more of being a lot more of a concern than it was even 20, 25 years ago. And they're saying, you know, if we wreck the environment up here, you know, we don't gain from the mining, and we have everything to lose from the mining. And so that's kind of why I think there's been this shift in environmentalism in places along the lakeshore. And not all of them, there are exceptions, such as the city of Silver Bay. But Duluth and Grand Marais, I think in particular, are saying the environment is what's going to keep us afloat, so we can't afford to see it ruined.
Yeah, and you bring up a very good point, because tourism is a big part of the economy in northern Minnesota, and if you have lakes and rivers that ended up getting polluted because of some sort of spill from a pipeline or a mine, yeah, that kills your tourism industry. And Aaron Clems, who is a friend of the show that we sometimes have on from the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, he got into a little bit of a Twitter dispute with someone who was a supporter of Simonson, who was not happy that he was knocked off. And I think Clems brought up a good point, too, saying that it doesn't need to be mutually exclusive between your support for unions versus your support for environmentalism. And he even brought up that when you look at PolyMet and Line 3 and these other projects that are being proposed up there, A, they're really not going to create many Minnesota jobs, and then they're not even going to do much in terms of trying to get Minnesota and the U.S. towards energy independence. They're going to have a very, very little impact. So that's what happened up in northern Minnesota as McEwen was able to knock off longtime state senator Eric Simonson. One more race to highlight where a DFL incumbent lost, that would be in St. Paul, where Representative John Lesch was defeated by challenger Athena Hollins, as returns were showing Hollins ahead by about 20 percentage points. So what does this overall mean? Because it's been kind of interesting watching and reading along with some of the local media outlets, whether that's TV or print. The narrative has been, look at how far left the DFL is moving now. They're going in a more liberal and a progressive direction. And while that is true, they don't often point out that Republicans are moving in this same direction, too. I mean, just look at several examples we have of Jim Neuberger making racist comments. He's the former St. Cloud rep. Or we recently have Mary Kiffmeyer engaging in racist Facebook posts with white supremacists. Or we have, who else, Mary Franzen comparing food stamp recipients to animals. So yeah, Republicans are certainly moving in a more extreme direction, but that doesn't often get pointed out in the local media. Instead, the entire narrative is, look at how liberal the Democrats are becoming, and it's used as kind of a scare tactic against some of the more suburban Democrats. And that's where I think the real divide could be in the future of the Democratic Party in Minnesota are going to be these more progressive politicians who represent cities versus the more moderate Democrats who represent suburbs. It's a coalition that will last for at least a few years, especially since Joe Biden, the Democratic nominee for president, has embraced the idea of winning the suburbs. But once he gets into office, it'll be interesting to see if that alliance keeps going, simply because you might have more progressive Democrats who are thinking not enough action is being taken on healthcare or the environment or other issues. So it's an alliance that can last for now, but there definitely is a divide, I think, among Democrats with more suburban moderates versus more progressive politicians who represent more urban and city areas. We're going to take a break and come on back with one final segment here on FYI Politics. We're at 952-946-6205. Stick around.
If you or someone you know is considering a move to assisted living, consider calling NeighborCare, a new kind of in-home support that is more affordable than traditional home care. This innovative new home care model is designed to help older adults remain independent by making in-home support services more affordable and accessible. Care professionals can help with daily tasks in smaller time increments, even multiple times a day as necessary. Support is offered 24 hours a day. Serving the Twin Cities community for more than 125 years, Episcopal Homes understands the importance of a safe and supportive environment. NeighborCare will begin its pilot closest to the Episcopal Home service area within the urban core of St. Paul. This service benefits from financial support from the State of Minnesota Department of Human Services, which recognizes innovation is needed to help support older adults in living well at home. Call 651-444-4000 today to find out if NeighborCare by Episcopal Homes is available in your neighborhood.
The Bakersfield Sound comes to Stillwater on September 12th. Steel guitar legend Norm Hamlet played on Merle Haggard's hits for five decades. Norm is joined on stage by Mark Wayne and Mario Carboni, the piano-playing honky-tonk rebel. Enjoy the classic Bakersfield Sound outdoors at the Zephyr Theater in Stillwater, Saturday, September 12th at 5. Get your tickets now for this unforgettable night. Call 651-571-2444 or go to stillwaterzephyrtheater.org.
Crooner's Supper Club is leading the Twin Cities back to live performances this summer with two new distance-safe outdoor dinner show options. The popular Lakeside Drive-In concerts will continue with new shows added throughout the summer. And not to be outdone, Crooner's is also introducing a new Lakeside Cafe in its outdoor patio space designed to offer a more intimate, distance-safe outdoor dinner show experience. So head to Crooner's Supper Club off Moore Lake and Highway 65 this summer for some delicious food and great music. Make your reservations now at croonersmn.com.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Hi, I'm Alicia Luther-Thom, certified financial planner with an all-women team at RBC Wealth Management. Making sure you and your loved ones can live comfortably in the future starts with the choices you make today. During times like these, having a trusted investment team is more important than ever. We practice social distancing and can work with clients remotely. This is Alicia Luther-Thoms at 612-770-4460 or alicia.luther.thoms@rbc.com.
RBC Wealth Management, a division of RBC Capital Markets, LLC, member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC.
Final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Didn't even have a chance to talk about Kamala Harris being selected as Joe Biden's vice president. I'll save that for Friday because I can't squeeze in all I have to say about that in the 3 minutes I have remaining in the show. So we'll get to that on Friday. Because, by the way, tomorrow my show is going to be recorded, but do have some good interviews lined up that I think you'll find very informative. One is going to be talking more about this payroll tax cut and the effect on Social Security and whether this executive order that was issued by the Trump administration is even constitutional in the first place. The other interview I'm going to be doing is with a journalist from the Minnesota Reformer, as we are going to be talking about what would happen if the Minneapolis police were abolished? Because the way labor laws are written in Minnesota, you could end up with these very same union officers representing whatever the next incarnation of law enforcement would be in Minnesota. And it all stems from a state Supreme Court case in Brainerd, where the city of Brainerd tried abolishing their own fire department, but due to labor law, they weren't able to do so, and this could very much relate to what is possibly happening in Minneapolis with their own police department. So that's what's coming up on tomorrow's show. Let's get to a couple quick hitter news stories before we wrap things up today. Uber's CEO has threatened to shut down the ride-sharing service until the November election. The reason why? Well, the state of California is forcing Uber and Lyft to classify their drivers as employees instead of independent contractors, which they rightfully are doing, because if you are a driver for Uber or Lyft, you really are an employee. There's nothing about being an independent contractor that really fits that definition whatsoever. You essentially are an employee, but that is the latest threat coming from the Uber CEO. This I find pretty significant with what's happening with the Postal Service. So the head of the Iowa Postal Service Workers Union, rather, on Tuesday was talking to a local media outlet and talking about how mail sorting machines are being removed from post offices throughout the state of Iowa at the direction of the new Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy, who, of course, is a major Republican donor and ally to President Trump. Just yet another thing they're trying to do to clog up the mail system by getting rid of these mail sorting machines. Really doesn't save you a lot of money to get rid of these sorting machines. So, yeah, it's nothing else than just trying to rig the election, in a sense, in favor of President Trump this fall. So watch for that. Don't have any reports of mail sorting machines being removed in Minnesota, but if they're happening in Iowa, it's unfortunately probably going to happen in Minnesota in not too long. All right, I am out of time for today. Stay tuned. We got Matt McNeil coming up next. And don't forget Pilots Progressive Party tonight at 5.